Miss Charlotte.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. 2017 could prove to be a busy one for the Charlotte Area Transit System. CATS is getting ready to open the long-awaited next leg of the Lynx Blue Line from 7th Street to the University. They're set to start construction on the next phase of the streetcar line, and despite the absence of a funding mechanism, they're forging ahead with ambitious plans for building additional rail lines. John Lewis is here to fill us in on all of this. He is the CEO of CATS, and to help give us more perspective on the growing need for a transit system in this burgeoning area, Mary Newsom has also joined us. She is Associate Director of Urban and Regional Affairs with the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. Good morning. Welcome back to both of you. Nice to have you here.
Good morning.
We have gone, John, from a small, difficult-to-use transit system when I first got here 30 years ago or so, through a period of naysaying about light rail, how it was going to be a boondoggle, arguments over the need and the efficacy of a streetcar, to calls for more rail lines in outlying areas. So how would you characterize what CATS has at its disposal right now to what you perceive its needs to be going forward?
Well, I think certainly the framework of the discussion has changed dramatically over the last decade. As you laid out, there was first, do we need it? Can we make it work? Is it going to be a boondoggle? To now, we're no longer talking about should we have transit options. Now the discussion has pivoted to when do I get my train? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great result of very forward-thinking planning in the Charlotte region and the success of the Blue Line.
When we look at the success of the Blue Line, what are we talking about? Are we talking about the fact that the Blue Line revitalized, actually created a whole area we now call South End? Are we talking about raising the tax base because of that? Are we talking about because ridership is more than we ever thought it would be? What are we talking about?
I think it's all of the above, and you hit on all of the issues that come about as a result of very good planning. Number one, we're providing additional mobility options for 15,000 people a day. Number two, the revitalization and the economic development results of that investment in that rail infrastructure. And then the third part of it is really supporting the foundation and of economic development goals of this city. When we are looking at attracting new business and attracting the best and brightest talent, you know, quality of life becomes a huge part of that issue, and transit plays a big role in that.
Almost from day one, the Lynx Blue Line outstripped ridership expectations. Is that still the case?
It is still. We try to project ridership 20 years out, and in the first year, we were already at the surpassing our first decades. And while overall ridership at CATS has started to drop, the light rail, the Blue Line, continues to keep pace with its ridership.
And what do you see happening when it opens to the university?
Well, I think it's going to open a huge new ridership audience to us. We are, you know, when you talk about providing mobility options to that next generation of Charlottians, you're reaching out to that millennial generation, and connecting to the university really gives us great options, not only for, again, giving people options to the single occupancy vehicle, but also supporting economic development along that corridor and connecting the university's main campus to opportunities downtown.
What do you project ridership will be when it opens up? Who's going to be riding it? Is it going to be students coming from uptown to the university or coming from the university to the bars at night? Who's it going to be?
I think it's all of the above. Not only will it be students and faculty at the university, but also we're providing mobility options to commuters who live in that area and along the I-77 corridor. As people are coming down and the 85 corridor, they can short-circuit that drive commute and get a more defined commuting time by just making use of rail.
We talk about the Blue Line, Mary Newsom, almost as though it's a complete transit system in and of itself. It's not. It's one half of one planned line right now until it opens to the university, perhaps beyond in some future universe. But put this thing into perspective, because there was a time before the Blue Line when there was no rail. We only had bus service here. Put it into perspective. What has it meant to the city? What has it meant to cats? What has it meant to people?
Before I did that, I want to just piggyback on what John said about UNC Charlotte. The university is planning to, through a charge, it's not a fee, it's a charge, a service charge. Every student's ID card will be an all-access transit pass.
Really?
And they are going to make that available to faculty and staff. We'll have to pay something. They haven't settled on a final number, but I've been told it's in the neighborhood of about $50 a year.
So this is a new funding source, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, well, not only is it a funding source, but it is an incentive for students and faculty members to ride. It's a great deal and a great partnership.
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, for me today, I'm here downtown. I've got a noon meeting downtown. Then I've got a 2 o'clock meeting on campus. If I could, I would just not drive up there at 2 o'clock and come back. But back to your question about the overall meaning, I think that having a transit line signals to the world that Charlotte is forward-looking. Most people under 30, when they're looking to live in cities, which a lot of people under 30 are, look to see as their transit. I was here when we had the little bitty old bad bus system, and it was pathetic. I took it when it snowed, and that was the only time. And now, if I had good service on Providence Road, not that I'm going to come back and beat you up about that, I would take it a lot because it's a much better bus system. Can it be improved? Yeah. And I think we're going to talk some about that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about bus system improvements because it's part of an overall system. It's not just the Blue Line that we're going to be talking about here. But John just mentioned, Mary, that it provides the existing line provides transportation options for people, and those options will expand as it expands to the north, and more people will have more options. But some people look at what has happened in Southend with the construction and the development and the tens of thousands of apartments that have gone up because of the Blue Line, and what they see is more traffic on the roads and more congestion. So which is it?
I think it's all of the above. You do have more traffic. As the city grows, there will be more traffic. There will be more traffic regardless of what we do with transit. If you build transit, you don't have less traffic. You have less traffic than you might have had otherwise.
So if more people come to live near and around the university area because the Blue Line now exists and they can connect it to Uptown and other places, are we going to have worse traffic in that area? Are we going to have worse traffic on I-85 because there are more people living up there?
I don't know how much worse it's going to be. It's going to be worse, as I said,
anybody
regardless.
Know? Does the city know?
I think that smart people can make projections. What you don't know is how much development you're going to have, how much of it is going to be done under old zoning laws that don't require a lot of connectivity, a lot of connected streets. If the new development is all connected streets, sidewalks, bike lanes, you probably have less new congestion than you would have otherwise. I mean, right now, most of the apartments that have been built up near UNC Charlotte are, multifamily zoning that has its roots in the 1960s and 70s. They don't have to do connected streets.
And John Lewis, Mary brings up some interesting points here, is that the fact that whether or not more congestion results from Blue Line or the Silver Line or the Red Line streetcar, it doesn't matter. It's going to come anyway. A growing city like Charlotte needs transportation options. Without a transit system, what would happen?
Absolutely. I think when you look at the Charlotte region, which is one of the fastest growing regions in the country, and the city of Charlotte is the fastest growing city in the Southeast, that growth is coming. And so the question is not whether it's going to happen. It's how are we going to manage it as it occurs? And I always thought that investing in transit isn't going to solve the congestion issue. What you want to do is give people options. And I always say when we're talking about transit and whether or not we're successful or not is when the average citizen, when he or she is thinking of whatever trip they're taking, does transit come into play? Yeah. And as Mary mentioned earlier, she may drive into the university or into downtown, but when she's thinking about, I have a meeting downtown, I have to get back to the university, I can utilize transit for those trips. And so we're trying to create a slew of options that can get people to support the quality of life.
There were people who were not only opposed to the Blue Line, they're opposed to transit. They're opposed to giving money to a bus system because, you know, they want to be able to get in their car and go where they want to go, when they want to go, and they don't perceive any need for a great big bus system. Are we still that we heard that a lot before the Blue Line came online. So are we still hearing that? As you're talking about rail lines from Mooresville, as you're talking about what's going to go down Independence Boulevard, whatever, which we'll talk about, are you still hearing things like that? We don't care about this. Just widen the roads and let my car be on it.
I think we're always going to hear naysayers to anything that's new and innovative. But I think that group of naysayers is getting smaller and smaller every day. I was in Statesville a couple of months ago and was having a meeting with a group of elected officials. And one of those officials stood up and said at the time, you know, 5 years ago, I would never even be at a meeting like this because we just transit was not a consideration. And she said she is hearing from her constituents. When can we get more transit into this area? And I think that's an endemic of everything, how our region is changing, how people are looking for other options. And it's beyond just, does this bus system work or does this rail system work? People are living longer. They're staying more active. And they're looking for efficient transportation options.
I'm not sure why you took this job, but when you took this job, I think it was 2015, you were tasked with lots of different things, among them expanding the existing light rail platforms, because we're going to have three-car trains very soon, not just two-car trains. And that means the platforms have to be longer, bigger. Where do we stand with that transformation?
Well, we're taking a look at all of our capital program moving forward. And eventually, you're exactly right, as we anticipate, and eventually we will grow the system to the point where we will have so many riders we need to add additional trains, and that's a good thing. Right now, the Blue Line was built to accommodate two-car trains, which we have been operating for the last several years, and as we look into the future, we'll move to three-car. We have expanded four of our current stations and are planning on doing the other nine as soon as we possibly can. It gets down to a resource allocation.
Can you run three-car trains unless all of the platforms will accommodate them?
You know, we could run three-car train. Now that we've done are finishing the initial four, we're looking at major events. And so football games, you know, basketball games, you know, all-star games and other things where we know that we're going to have large crowds. It doesn't make sense for us to do it on a daily basis. But as we continue, we made that strategic investment to keep up with ridership at big events, and we'll continue to evaluate that.
Are all the platforms going up north from 7th Street to the university, three-car platforms?
Yes.
And do you anticipate a day when we may need four-car trains?
I hope so.
Should we not be building the platforms already for four-car trains?
I think we'll start with three cars, and okay. Then we always have the option to expand.
John Lewis is CEO of CATS. Mary Newsom is with us. She's the Associate Director of Urban and Regional Affairs at UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute. We'll come back and more and talk more about what the CATS has in its future or hopeful future in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
You're listening to an encore edition of Charlotte Talks, recorded last month with CATS CEO John Lewis. Yesterday, Charlotte Area Transit System officials said the Lynx Blue Line extension won't open for service in August as originally planned. Instead, the 9.3-mile line from Uptown to UNC Charlotte will open 7 months later in March 2018. Reporter David Borax has an update at WFAE.org. Support for Charlotte Talks this morning comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Mecklenburg Library's Get Ready with Words, encouraging success in young children through vocabulary building. Parents and caregivers can teach a child words of the week at getreadywithwords.org. America's stand on immigrants and immigration seems to be changing by the minute. The Trump administration is taking a harder stand, and questions are swirling around which undocumented immigrants this new approach may impact. In a special two-hour public conversation, tonight we examine how the new policies differ from the old ones, talk to law enforcement about their role in this, and hear the personal stories of those affected. Tonight's free public forum is 7 to 9 p.m. at McGlohan Theater, and there's still time to register at WFAE.org. Or you can listen live tonight at 7 o'clock and again tomorrow morning at 9, right here on listener-funded public radio, 90.7 WFAE.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, President Trump wants a $54 billion jump in military spending. We'll look at that and the president's plan to, quote, obliterate ISIS. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte talks with Mike Collins on listener-funded public radio, 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's going to be a busy 2017 for Charlotte Transit. They'll be expanding the streetcar. They're expanding the Blue Line up north. There are plans now for commuter rail to Mooresville. There are plans on the drawing board for something, which we'll talk about, going down Independence Boulevard, and for making the bus system easier and more attractive to ride by shortening commute times. So we'll talk about all of that. George emails, are there any opportunities to extend the Blue Line to Rock Hill? John Lewis is CEO of CATS. Mary Newsom is Associate Director of Urban and Regional Affairs at UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. What about that? I mean, we stopped it just before Pineville because Pineville didn't want it. Now they want it in South Carolina.
I think that just shows how it's an example of how fast our region is growing. You know, areas of South Carolina are actually suburbs of
right.
Charlotte. And we provide express service into South Carolina. I think in terms of expanding our rail system, the ridership and the demand for it will drive that question pretty soon.
I mean, when you look at I-77 in the morning or the afternoon, wouldn't it make sense that people in Fort Mill and Rock Hill would ride it if it was available to ride?
I am very closely, and our board of directors are very closely looking at the growth in our neighbors to the south. We have some structural challenges being a city of Charlotte entity about owning and operating real property in South Carolina, but none of those are insurmountable hurdles.
How do they get around that in places like Washington, where the Washington Metropolitan Transit Authority goes into Virginia, Maryland, and through D.C.? How do they do that?
I'm guessing here that the MTA in Washington? No, the Metro.
Metro.
I don't think it's a city agency.
No, it's an independent agency. It's a tri-state agreement between the state of Maryland, District of Columbia, and Virginia. And CATS is a city department. So, again, not insurmountable, but definitely some challenges that we'll have to address.
But I'd like to go back a little bit to what John was talking about, and your question about Rock Hill and Fort Mill, and John was talking about being in Statesville and people saying, wow, you know, we really want this. You know, Charlotte had to go through a huge education process. Why do we want transit? Why does it matter? Why is it worth the money we're putting into it? And as you were saying, I think mostly the Charlotte civic infrastructure has come to terms. Yeah, we agree. It was a good thing. But that education process really hasn't happened in the regional counties. So you have some leaders who are saying, we really have to look at this. But I think the population is still back where Charlotte was in 1990. I remember there's a Union County commissioner back in the 90s who said, we really want transit. We just don't want the density.
Can you have one without the other?
Well, no.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's where people's brains have been.
You can join our conversation by emailing us at charlottetalks at WFAE.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. John Lewis, you have been working to advance this long-term transit plan, which has been on the books for years. I think it's called the 2030 Plan, and there'll be changes to that going forward. That plan includes the expansion of the streetcar and commuter rail to the north, some kind of transit development along Independence Boulevard, and out to the airport from uptown. Funding, though, always seems to be the bugaboo. It always seems to be the main issue. How do you explain that? I mean, it's clear that we need this. Why don't policymakers and politicians come up with the money?
That's the million-dollar question in any discussion.
Or like a couple of $100 billion.
At least. I think what we have to do, and I think our strategy in moving forward is, number one, we've had great experience and results from the initial Blue Line. We're about to open the second phase of that. That project is under budget. And I think there are two things that we have to do. And before we can come out and ask the community for additional investment, number one, to show that we're good stewards of their public dollar, that the money that they have already, the resources that they've already invested in CATS, that we are good stewards of that. And I think we're showing that. The Blue Line is operating very effectively. We're expanding. The economic development spinoffs of that are very clear. Second, that we are very clear on the plans and how we want to create a regional system. And as you mentioned, how do we get along the Silver Line, the Red Line, how do we connect the economic generator of this region, the airport, so that citizens in this region can have the connectivity needed? What we want to do is to bring those plans together to identify the corridors where to the north, to the airport, and along the Independence Corridor, and then have a really open discussion with the community about how we move that system forward.
Does the Blue Line pay for itself?
No, no.
Will it ever pay for itself?
Probably not in the foreseeable future.
Why not?
Because transit in how we've developed in this country is not to the point where in most cities public transit can pay for itself. Now, we can probably, if you look at the amount of congestion and the amount of ridership that cities like New York have and perhaps Chicago and San Francisco, some of the legacy cities may get to that point where they will probably break even. But, you know, that's the difference between moving 20,000 people and 20 million people.
And when you talk about a transit system overall, which it would include, in your case, buses, light rail, ultimately commuter rail, et cetera, streetcar, that won't pay for itself either, correct?
No, that's correct.
Okay. Now, it's kind of like an apples and oranges comparison here, Mary, but if transit systems cannot and do not pay for themselves, how do you measure that against roads, which are free?
Roads do not pay for themselves either. You have transportation, you have gas taxes, and they don't cover the full cost of road
building. Which is why we're moving to toll lanes.
Which is why some people say, well, why don't we do toll lanes? Or there's a lot of ways that people have proposed to fix the gap. You know, garbage service doesn't pay for itself. It's a service, and a lot of people believe that public transit is a public service.
Why then do we have these pockets of resistance to transit and more transit development and the expansion of rail? Why do we have that?
I think politically a lot of people just don't like their taxes to go up, especially if they cannot personally touch the services that they're going – I mean, garbage service, yeah, you can visibly see every day what it's doing for you. If you can't take a bus or don't want to take a bus – if buses in your mind are for poor people, you may not want the extra taxes.
For the last several years, former Charlotte Mayor Anthony Fox has been Secretary of Transportation in Washington, D.C. in the Obama administration. And your predecessor, John, Carolyn Flowers, the former CEO of CATS, is at the Federal Transit Administration. Has that been helpful to Charlotte?
Absolutely. It's good to have
how? In what way?
Very good to have friends in high places. I think on a couple of areas. Number one, we have been very competitive in the federal grant programs. I will say we're competitive because of the experience and the history that this region has shown in terms of supporting transit. Having the former mayor as the Secretary of Transportation, cannot hurt. But this region has earned the investment that the federal government has put into both the Blue Line and just recently Charlotte Gateway Station.
What happens on January 20th?
Well, we shall see. We have a change in administration. There are some questions about the philosophical leanings of the Trump administration, and we'll see how that plays out. But I think from a transportation standpoint, I certainly am encouraged by the fact that the Secretary of Transportation is a known entity.
The incoming
Secretary Chao is no stranger to the Department of Transportation, served in the Bush administration as an undersecretary at DOT. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to reaching out and working with our partners in Washington.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that we're going to see more emphasis on public-private partnerships because that was big in the Bush administration, try mm-hmm. to get the business community to help fund what they can, hence toll roads. That's a more fiscally conservative way to build transit, is to have private partners help foot the bill.
But people who don't like toll roads are expensive and to use, it seems to me. And people who don't want their taxes to go up, are they more expensive to use than they would be if you just paid for these roads out of your tax dollars? Because you spread the pain among more people.
I think that is a great debate, and I've seen statistics and research on both sides. And so raising and creating numbers, but would it be better to raise a gas tax 5 cents on everyone in the state, including visitors or individuals who just drive that day to pay $1, $1.50, $2,
except
whatever the toll
except
is?
With regard to the toll lanes on I-77, we don't know what it's going to cost. And if projects that have been built and operated by the same company are any indication elsewhere in the country, it could be as much as $20 a trip.
Well, I spent the last 5 years in Orlando, Florida, prior to coming here. Mm-hmm. And Florida makes tremendous use of toll lanes. Mm-hmm. And actually a very similar project to what's going on in the I-77 corridor is about to open in Orlando along Interstate 4. The folks there have accepted tolls. The one example I use is the one time you're late for a meeting or you're trying to get to your child's soccer game or ballet or whatever, we would pay anything to get there on time. And so, the interesting thing about tolls is you can use it when you want it and you don't have to use it. There are other alternatives. So we'll see how that plays out.
There has been a proposal from the U.S. Department of Transportation to make urban regions transportation planning more cohesive. I don't know what that means. Maybe you do, Mary, and you can tell me if you know what that means. How will that be impacted by the change in administrations?
I know what it means. I don't know how I don't know that you want me to explain what it means because it gets into a whole lot of acronyms. But there's these things called metropolitan planning organizations, which are supposed to plan transportation in urban areas, and the states set up mm-hmm. what's in your, they're called MPOs. The state sets up what's in your MPO based on some federal guidelines. And so the Charlotte region is split among six different MPOs, depending on how you define the Charlotte region. And Anthony Fox knows this. So it's not surprising that the DOT decided we've got to get more of these MPOs to merge. If you look in Charlotte, Cabarrus County, they don't plan their transportation with Charlotte. Gaston County doesn't plan its transportation with Charlotte. So there's all these structural ridiculous situations.
Impediments,
that's the word. Good word. So they came up with this rule, but I don't know how it finally came out, but they put it out for comment, and all the little MPOs all over the country said, no. So I think they added some language that said you have to merge, but you really don't have to if you vote not to. Mm-hmm. I would not publish that without checking on the facts, but I think that's sort of the general outline of what happened.
Donald Trump has mentioned, and he mentioned this many times, I believe, on the campaign trail, that we need to improve the nation's infrastructure. And I don't know whether he just means LaGuardia Airport because he lives in New York, or the tunnels coming in and out, or the bridges up there, but a lot of people have talked about this. Isn't transit and a transit system and rail and streetcar, isn't that part of our infrastructure?
Absolutely.
Does that make you feel optimistic then that perhaps there may be some money coming?
Well, I think anyone who lives in New York City knows the benefit of public transit. Whether or not they have ever gotten on a subway train or a bus, they know that the millions of people who are on that system, If not for that system, where would they be and what would the impact be to their lives? But I think it's beyond just the mobility of that. And when I talk about the other benefits of public transit, it is also supporting business and not just economic development, but the infrastructure of that business. And so when Bank of America and Wells Fargo and Duke Energy are looking to attract the best and brightest out of our institutions of higher education, these kids have options, and they're looking for quality of life. This generation has a very different definition of quality of life than perhaps some of us who've come before. And so we're competing not just against Raleigh and Durham and other cities in North Carolina. We're competing against Denver and Atlanta and Washington, D.C., and being able to utilize and live, work, and play is really what is driving a lot of these decisions.
I want to talk about the streetcar, but before we do that, Rick emails, when will CATS replace its ticket machines? I ride CATS buses and trains daily. The ticket machines are abysmal. Often every machine at the transit station is not functional. Folks miss trains regularly while waiting in lines for one functional ticket machine. This situation has gone on way too long. I will say this. I have not ridden the train all that much, but when I have, I am so puzzled by the ticket machines that I have missed trains trying to figure out, how do I buy a ticket?
Yes.
Why is it so damn complicated?
I will tell you, and I embrace that. And number one, it's not just the ticket vending machines. It was our fare boxes on board our buses. And over the last year, we've replaced every fare box on all of our buses. We will be replacing all of the TV ticket vending machines along our rail lines over the next year.
I mean, shouldn't it be as easy as buying a Coke out of a machine?
Even beyond that, the next phase of that, and while we need to have that infrastructure at our stations, but we're really looking forward to getting to mobile ticketing. We really are beyond pushing buttons and putting money into a machine. Everybody has a smartphone. Everybody uses their smartphone to buy goods and services throughout. We need to get to that point, and that's where the focus is, where customers can pay for their ride on their phone, flash it to our fare monitors on board,
right,
and take the middle machine out of the equation.
Okay. Let's talk about the streetcar. It has met the same kind of criticism that the Blue Line met with prior to its opening. That 2.5-mile extension takes it from, I guess, the transportation center out to Johnson C. Smith University. What do you see as the role of the streetcar along that route?
Well, I see, again, what we are looking to create is a system of mobility options. And the Blue Line has done fantastic providing north-south connections, but we don't have any east-west connections yet. And as we're looking to continue to build out the 2030 plan, it's about creating a system of mobility options. And I compare it to, you know, if you looked at roads and your road coming out of your house, you had a road that connects your house but didn't connect it to a main thoroughfare, then what is the efficiency and effectiveness of that roadway if not for the other roads that it connects to? And so what we're trying to do is build the second phase of the Gold Line to provide those east-west connections from Johnson C. Smith University to Uptown to the university and the hospital.
We'll talk some more about the streetcar and how it's supposed to work, and maybe the resistance will go away when the actual vehicle is changed when we come back at Charlotte Talks.
You're listening to an encore edition of Charlotte Talks, recorded last month with CAT CEO John Lewis. As we've reported yesterday, Charlotte Area Transit System officials said the Lynx Blue Line extension won't open for service in August as originally planned. Instead, the 9.3-mile line from Uptown to UNC Charlotte will open 7 months later in March 2018. Reporter David Borax has an update at WFAE.org. Support this morning comes from WFAE members and McElveen Family Law, helping couples and families for over 30 years with guidance through the process of divorce, custody, and alimony. Details at gomcelveenfamilylaw.com/NPR. And from the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show, with 15 gardens inspired by America, cooking demonstrations, landscaping advice, and decorating ideas, this Friday through Sunday at the Park Expo, southernspringhomeandgardenshow.com. and from Baby & Company, a modern birth center offering individualized maternity and well-woman care, classes, and wellness services in an intimate setting. More information available at babyandcompany.com. Coming up in 20 minutes on Point at 10 o'clock, President Trump wants a $54 billion jump in military spending. We'll look at that and the president's military plans at home and abroad. That's ahead at 10 o'clock on Point.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about transit and specifically the transit plans that CATS has in mind and what they're trying to accomplish this year with John Newsom, the CEO of CATS. John Lewis, the CEO of CATS. Mary Newsom is the Associate Director of Urban and Regional Affairs for UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute. It's part of the reluctance to accept the streetcar based on the fact that the vehicle in use right now is kind of a rickety throwback to 1910 when the new streetcar vehicles come into use, which look very much like the Blue Line cars. Will that change people's perception of what this is?
I think that's probably a factor in it. The replica of the traditional streetcars we use, you know, harken back to the heydays of San Francisco streetcars and all of that. You look at it as a short term, you know, I need to get it around the block and I'll just hop on the slow moving older streetcar. When we're moving to modern streetcar on this, which look exactly like and operate exactly like the Blue Line trains, I think it starts to think you'd think more of an efficient, fast-moving system.
And it'll be hip. That's what people want, isn't it? I mean, when we come right down to it, they don't want to be caught dead riding a bus, but if it's a hip train, maybe so.
Everybody loves trains.
Okay. Especially kids. Now, the ridership last summer on the streetcar, I understand, was 78% above projections. And I take it that will only improve with the expansion, correct?
Absolutely.
But the streetcar is free. So what does that really mean?
Well, I think that plays a factor in it. Number one, a lot of those connections are coming, people getting off the Blue Line and going to the university or out to the hospital. And so we're providing access to different movements for that. But, you know, a free fare absolutely is going to pay a part of that.
There was a closed county commission meeting that kind of skipped a lot of the people's awareness because it was the week after the holidays. And in that meeting, there was a proposal considered to turn the Memorial Stadium into a soccer stadium for $150 million for professional soccer. And when Dina DiIorio, who is the county manager, got up to make her PowerPoint presentation, one of the first things that she said about it was that it would increase ridership for the streetcar. Is that a good thing, a compliment, or is that a troubling comment to you?
I think it's a good thing. you know, event ridership is a big part of even the Blue Line ridership for Panthers games and for Hornets games and other events that go on in Uptown. And so, again, we want to encourage people to get out of their cars to make more effective use of their time. And I think streetcar provides a great opportunity.
When do these new cars come online?
Those cars will come online. We will have them in the next 3 years. When we open the streetcar in 2020, the new modern streetcars will be here.
Okay. The biggest part of the current system, and probably the system going forward, of course, is the buses themselves. Your predecessors often talked about the need to make buses easier to use and to improve the ridership experience, and a lot of that has already happened, but you are launching or have already launched a year-long study to reduce commute times and make other upgrades this year. Why do we need another study?
Well, I think our endeavor in this with our Envision My Ride study is this region has grown so fast over the last 10 years. And it's been about a decade since we've really taken a comprehensive look at where our buses are, our routes are going, and are we meeting our customers' needs? And we wanted to take a little different tack on that. We're making use of a new software system called Remix that Baltimore and Houston have utilized in rebranding and revamping their bus system, which is really interactive. Our riders are professional riders. They know even better than our planners do what the challenges are with our system, what works well and what does not. And this gives us a platform to go out and solicit information from our riders and then test that in a simulated transit environment, and then go back to those customers and say, this is what we heard, this is how we've done it, did we meet the mark in that? And we want to make sure we get that right, because right now, if it takes more than one bus to get from your origin to destination, the average trip is 90 minutes.
Wow.
For our riders. That is not an effective transit system. For many of us, if our morning commute took 90 minutes, we'd probably either get a new job or find a new place to live.
Yeah.
And we've got to make sure that our bus system meets those
needs. Is the 90 minutes because of traffic on the roads, or is it because it's a hub-and-spoke system where you have to come downtown, change buses, and go back out?
Exactly. It's because it's a hub-and-spoke system that a majority, almost 24,000 to 25,000 of our riders have to come down to the Charlotte Transit Center in order to transfer buses to go, and many times, back out to the suburbs where their destination is.
Why did we do it that way in the first place?
Because I think all systems traditionally were hub and spoke, where people lived in the suburbs and worked in downtown areas. Well, now we have these edge cities, mm-hmm. like Ballantyne, like the airport, like the university, which are not in uptown. But our bus system still makes you come into uptown to then go back out to the university or to Ballantyne or to other areas.
Yeah, let me give a quick example. I live off of Providence Road in South Charlotte. I mean, for me to drive to the Blue Line would take at least 15 minutes, so it's not an option. I work at the university. The university, if you figure in staff and faculty and students, is over 30,000. I mean, it's a town the size of Mooresville. And that's the university campus. That's not even counting University City, which I don't even know how many people work there. But it's, you know, like a town the size of Salisbury. It's a big place. There's two buses that serve that area. One is Bus 29, which runs from South Park. It runs once an hour, and it takes almost an hour to get there. The other one is Bus 11, which runs from uptown. And that's it.
So how would you change it? And is that part of the reason for the plan to figure out how to change it to make it easier to use to reduce commute times? Is that what you're trying to do?
What we're trying to do is to move from a hub-and-spoke system to more of a grid system. So we want to know where our riders are coming from and where they're going to. And we want to make sure that we can make as many of our rides. You can't do it for everyone, because somebody is going to have to get to a place that you can't get there directly. But we'd like to limit the amount of transfers and have more cross town from suburb to suburb routes rather than suburb to downtown, to then get on another bus to go back out to the suburb.
So what's the timetable for that?
And so we anticipate having the first round of changes in the spring. Again, we hear from our customers. We've had well over 1,000 responses to our surveys. We'll come up with the first draft, and then we take it back out to the community for the response. And then I anticipate making some final tweaks on that and to have a final draft done late summer, early fall.
There has been a plan on the table, the 2030 plan, for a long time. And last year, you and the Metropolitan Transit Commission decided to update and rework that plan, which I think was adopted in 2002, as a matter of fact. It calls for four major projects: a 30-mile commuter rail line from uptown to Mooresville, a light rail or streetcar line from uptown to the airport, a 13.5-mile light rail project, the Silver Line along Monroe Road and Independence Boulevard, and the Gateway Station, which is an uptown hub. All of these projects are unfunded. Is that right?
All of these projects are unfunded from a construction standpoint. What our board of directors did was give us the authorization to move into the next level of planning. So rather than having just dots on a map, we really want to get into the corridor and exactly figure out exactly where the corridors will, where potential stations will be, and to really begin to get to a point where we can put a price tag on those alignments. And then I think we have to have a really straightforward conversation with the community about, number one, how much it's going to cost and what are the options out there for bringing these corridors online. probably will have to be a public-private partnership in order to do that. And then, quite frankly, I'd like to do them all at one time.
Really?
And
by 2030?
And by 2030. Now, that's going to cost...
How much do you think this would cost?
Look, back of the napkin, it's probably $5 to $8 billion. If we're looking at just the amount of miles in our experience from the Blue Line, it's probably $1.5 to $2 billion for each of those corridors. But at the end of the day, we can do that within 10 years, or we can continue on the way we've been doing it now and deliver a corridor every 10 years.
And the longer you wait...
the more expensive it gets.
Okay. So this commuter rail line to Mooresville has been talked about for years, and now that interest rates are rising, it's only going to get more expensive to wait. No local, no state, no federal funding has yet been lined up. No timetable for starting that line exists. And there's still some question about cooperation between Norfolk Southern to let you put the trains on their tracks. What are the chances of that project actually being realized, even if you have the money in your pocket for it?
Well, I think we've had great conversations with our partners at Norfolk Southern, who at the end of the day have a business to run,
right.
And that's to move freight along the corridor. Also, there's a third partner in that, and that's the North Carolina Railroad, which has a leasing relationship with Norfolk Southern. So it's a three-party discussion. We are moving that conversation forward. At the end of the day, we've got to get to a place very soon to either fish or cut bait. Can we operate a commuter line along that corridor? If not, what other options do we have?
The streetcar right now goes from Presbyterian Hospital to the Transportation Center. You're going to break ground and expand it out to Johnson C. Smith. It will eventually go out toward the old Eastland Mall. I think you're having to rebuild a highway bridge to accomplish that. And eventually you have plans to take it out maybe to the airport. That's one of the options that you are considering. And Rebecca emails, what is the thinking behind a streetcar connection with the airport rather than light rail, as so many other cities have? I can't imagine flying across the country and then taking a streetcar into the inner city, and I wonder how it meshes with hopes that commuters from Gaston County have for a transit connection to Charlotte.
I think that's a great question, and that's the reason why we are embarking on a new study to the airport. What is the best corridor to connect uptown to the airport? And then look at what is the best technology to do that. I think in the past we've looked at streetcar because streetcar was moving forward, and we were looking at it more, how do we get workers to the airport? Now, the airport continues to grow. We've got an unbelievable large development that has just come to fruition, the River District out there.
Right.
So I think we've got to look at it more in terms of providing commuter connectivity to uptown. How do we provide mobility options to the River District and beyond to Gaston County, not just how do we get workers back and forth?
Does the airport want a streetcar or a light rail coming out there?
The airport, we are partnering with them on, they're going through a great deal of expansion. Transit connections is a part of their overall plan. I think they'll leave the technology up to CATS to decide, but we are absolutely planning on making connections to the airport.
What would you like to see?
I'm going to go for the most efficient option that we have that makes those connectivity options. We've got to connect uptown to the airport, to the River District, and to Gaston County.
Do you think that riders' objection to streetcars is because they're seeing a streetcar as being what it is right now, that old-fashioned rickety trolley? Would that change? We're only speculating on what they're really talking about here, but, I mean, would that change, do you think, if it was a sleek transportation vehicle like the Blue Line?
I think it would change. But also, there's this real blurry line in my head between what's a streetcar and what's light rail. I mean, if you go to Houston, they have a quote-unquote light rail, and it runs in the street. There's some ballers.
Does it stop for lights?
I'm not sure. I think it does in some places
and maybe not in other places.
Why is it
a streetcar then?
I think people, when you say streetcar, people hearken back to the olden days, so to speak. And when you say light rail, they think new, modern, faster, more efficient. And I think there's actually all kinds of hybrid-y ways that those different things operate. I think that streetcar, it does stop. at lights. It's not as fast. But then again, is it better than paying $10 for parking?
You have also now firmed up an actual route for the so-called Silver Line. Leaving uptown, the train would, if I could, correct me if I'm wrong about this, leaving uptown, the train would hug Independence Boulevard on the north side of that road and then cross the road on a bridge that you would build to Bojangles Coliseum and Ovens Auditorium, and then go down the south side of Independence till it reaches Village Lake Drive, and then it would turn and go down the median, ultimately go down the median of Monroe Road. At last report, some confusion about how it would get out of uptown to the north side of Independence. Has that been resolved yet?
That is the actual, moving the Independence Corridor, and you've gotten the alignment exactly correct, but we are very anxious on figuring out exactly how we transverse the uptown area. This area is growing, uptown is growing so rapidly. Yeah. Just in the last year and a half I've been here, the skyline of the city has changed so much. We're going to run into a point where we may be options in the uptown area may be eliminated for us. And so we want to make sure, how do we connect either at the transit center or maybe at Gateway Station as we're bringing Amtrak service into uptown? What is the best way to provide those connectivity
options?
Couldn't
it split off the blue line?
That's certainly a viable option.
Are tunnels an option or bridges an option?
Well, tunnels are certainly an option. Depends on how much money you want to spend. But I think we have to look at everything that's on the table, including going underground for some portions in uptown.
Given the political climate, we only have 30 seconds. We don't even have that, so I can't ask the question, Mary Newsom. I was going to ask you about the political climate in Raleigh, between Raleigh and Charlotte. Is any of this possible? If you have a short answer, you can give it. Yes or no?
Climate not good. Possible, probably not with state money.
Mary Newsom, Associate Director of Urban and Regional Affairs at UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute, and John Lewis, the CEO of CATS. Thank you all for the hour.